for coming and welcome to our welcome to our Black History Month keynote speaker tonight, Mr. Amiri Baraka. Yes, please. I'd like to thank you for joining us this evening, and I'd like to thank first the brothers of Alpha Phi Alpha for their assistance, and I'd like to remind you all that the cabaret tickets are still on sale for their cabaret this Sunday, excuse me. And, Saturday. They're on sale Saturday, and I mean, they're on sale for Saturday at the cloakroom. They're being on sale today and tomorrow. And I would especially like to thank Professor Rod Bush. Without his assistance, this evening would not be happening. Would you please all join me in applauding him? Thank you very much. And I'd just like to say that although he is, Mr. Baraka is our keynote speaker for Black History Month, I'd like to say that Black History Month isn't just February. It's every day, and it's not Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, you know, so on and so forth. I mean, Black History Month is every day. It's you and I. It's me standing right up here as a black woman able to speak in front of all of you, and I'd like you all to recognize that, and please don't forget that. Once again, you know, the fact that I'm up here reading is a feat in and of itself. Several years ago, I would have been killed for doing this. So please remember that Black History Month is not the 29 days, 28 days in February. It's every single day, and it's you and I. So as I said, this evening, our keynote speaker is Professor Amiri Baraka. Amiri Baraka was born Leroy Jones in Newark, New Jersey, and he is a political activist, a teacher at Stony Brook, and also he is a writer, poet, and dramatist, and a leading exponent of the revolutionary tradition in black writing. His most recent book is The Leroy Jones, Amiri Baraka Reader, and it's by the Thundermouth Press. And also he has bought books that are available to us later on this evening, and it's Five Bop Trees, and it's available, as I said, later on this evening to all of us who are interested. So once again, thank you very much, and with no further ado, Professor Amiri Baraka.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Good to see so many people. Sorry it's so cold. I've been traveling around, though, for a while here. Black History Month is the only month that we have full employment, so they try to work you to death. What's happening? How you doing, brother? I see people I know in here, which is always a good sign, you know. The question that we wanted to talk about tonight was racism, you know, and we talk a little bit about racism, try to lay it out in a scientific way. Hope we can draw most people to the side of those fighting against it. I'm not trying to be both-sided. I'm a partisan, a revolutionary. Let's say first that we have to deal with slavery as the kind of primitive accumulation of wealth that makes capitalism possible. Slavery exists under both feudalism and it exists under capitalism. It exists under feudalism in the United States. By the 19th century, you begin to see a capitalist slavery, and indeed the monies, the wealth that can be accumulated from slavery, that is not paying anybody money, you know what I'm saying? The amassing of that wealth is what you call primitive accumulation, that from that primitive accumulation of wealth comes, number one, the Industrial Revolution, the buildup of Europe and America into world powers. In fact, Marx says there is no such thing as world trade without slavery and the triangular trade, that is from Africa to the New World to England and back to Africa. We know also that some 100 million Africans were destroyed in the Middle Passage. The poet Jacques Romain, the great Haitian poet, talks about that there is a railroad made of human bones at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. Black ivory, he calls it. read Jacques Romain's poetry, 100 million people. And those of us who've been to West Africa, sister here, we were there when about 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. If you drive through West Africa, even today, outside of Dakar, we drove for miles and miles and miles. It's like empty. You can drive for miles in Africa. As a matter of fact, this sister gave me a photograph of my second son, Raj, you can't see it, and I, standing in Gori, the slave castle. There's an island. All you students should go to see that, particularly you black students. Go to see that. Go to Gori, the slave castle. My son Raz and I sat in the darkness for about 20 minutes, tried to check it out, what that must be. You know, with the window up there. We sat in the darkness and just smelled that, tried to hook ourselves up with slavery. And she must have snapped that picture as we were standing there right near the hole in the wall where the weak and the sick slaves, they would take and push them through that hole in the wall where they fell down into the sea, into the rocks, and the sharks would circle, and the blood stayed there all the time. We checked slavery out. I remember trying to put the chains around my neck and my son's neck, and the sister named Rashida say, "I'm not going to take that picture." Remember that? She said, "I'm not going to take that picture." Because we stood there and said, "Come on, take this picture." It was funny. I thought it was funny. "Take this picture." She said, "I'm not going to take that picture. I'm not going to take that picture." The question of slavery. So that the question, finally, of slavery is linked to capitalism. That world trade, international trade, the triangular trade, that slavery is linked to capitalism. Without slavery, there is no capitalism. That is the primitive accumulation of wealth needed for capitalism. But I should also say this, brothers and sisters, that remember that it was the Africans, we ourselves, that initiated slavery. Remember that. And it was we ourselves, the Africans, who sold ourselves to the Europeans. Check that out. My son, Ahi, you know, always was a little bit of a nationalist. When I told him that, he said, "Yeah, but who would want to buy a person in the first place?" Oh, well, there's a heavy thing. Who would want to buy a person? What would you do with a person? But that question of what goes around comes around. You understand what I'm saying? So that even today, while we sell parts of our behind to other people, whether we call ourselves the Black Caucus or Negro Mayors or the first Negro to do this, the first Negro to crawl on his knees 3,000 miles for a gold ribbon, whatever Negro that is, as long as we are willing to sell ourselves, slavery is perpetuated. But then who want to buy a person? My son said. Who wants to have a slave? Who needs a slave? Who needs to feel superior? Who is so lazy that would not do their own work? That would not create their own society? Yeah, check it out. It's important. Racism particularly means oppression because of physical appearance. Racism particularly, so that even though some of us could be exploited similarly, like all people in the United States, except for that 0.6% that own the land and the mineral wealth, the transportation, 0.6%, the people that Clinton works for, David Rockefeller and Morgan, the 0.6% that own everything. You understand what I'm saying? That own everything. But racism identifies you by physical characteristics, so that the Afro-American people at this point suffer from a national oppression, and I'm going to go into what national oppression is. What national oppression is exacerbated by racism. That means even though you suffer from national oppression, and for instance in the Serbs and the Croats in Eastern Europe, now that the imperialism has destroyed the Soviet Union, and all of the worms have crawled out from under the rocks, so that all these peoples that once worked with Adolf Hitler, you know, in the Ukraine and in Lithuania and, you know, in Bosnia and Herzegovina, all of these criminal elements who the Soviet Union had held in check all these years, now they're crawling back out from under the rocks, talking about ethnic cleansing. That's Hitler again. The the Germans like it. That is the rulers of Germany. And we always have to make a distinction between those who rule and those who are ruled. But racism means that even though we might be suffering national oppression, for instance, like in Bosnia, Herzegovina, we might suffer from national oppression. But since we are not the same racial element, so-called, even though that's bizarre, because there ain't but one race on the planet. You know, how could you nationalists go for it in the first place? If Africans are indeed the first people on the planet, how could there be anybody without African blood? Think about that. How people trick you with words. You might be light-skinned from living up in the cold, but if you ain't got African blood in you, you must come from Mars. You must come from another planet. I'm not talking about the delusions of politics or what you think. I'm talking about objectively. If the first human beings are Africans, then everybody come from Africa. You might be light. But if you ain't got Africa in you, you come from somewhere out there and need to be looked at closely. But with racism, it means that we can look across the street and say, hey boy, you. There could be two or three people over there, all oppressed. What the racism is a physical identification. We can say, hey, you. No, I don't mean you. I don't mean you Irishmen who have been oppressed by English imperialism for 700 years. I don't mean you, no, you Italian who came over here, been over here 100 years, who were kicked in the behind when you came over here. I'm not talking about you Jews who were brought over here as debtors and escaping from the intolerance of Europe. No, I mean you dark-skinned person. That's what racism does. It's identification. It's oppression by physical characteristics. But what racism is, racism exacerbates national oppression. What is national oppression? National oppression is the robbery, that is actual robbery of money, and the withholding of political rights. That's what national oppression is. When capitalism, what capitalism is, you know what capitalism. Capitalism is wealth used to exploit, right? When capitalism outruns the boundary of one country, you understand what I'm saying? First you got competitive capitalism, where you got different kinds of people trying to exploit, and then it turns what was that, Jaws, the little ones begin to eat each other, and out of those little ones beginning to eat each other, particularly they get bigger and bigger and bigger, and then they start looking like David Rockefeller and them, you know, they get huge, then they have to leave the boundaries of one country and begin to search the world for new sources of raw materials, new markets, and new spheres of influence. That's what imperialism. One of the elements, the fundamental elements of imperialism is national oppression. What imperialism did, and imperialism appears on the scene, what we call modern imperialism, not the old imperialism of the Romans, but modern imperialism appears on the scene at the end of the 19th century. For the United States, you see it building up after the Civil War, you understand? They start actually internally by first overrunning the Mexicans and taking Mexico, Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, all those Mexico. You understand? What amazes me, people be talking about, you need to go back to Mexicans. They be telling Mexicans, you need to go back where you came from. They already where they came from. If they're in California, Texas, New Mexico, they where they came from. That's Mexico. You understand what I mean? That was the Mexican War, 1848. Then in 1898, and some more imperialism, that's when the United States took over Puerto Rico. You understand? Cuba. The Philippines. 1915, they went and got Haiti. You understand? We're talking about imperialism, where capitalism outruns the boundaries of one country and begins to search the world for new sources of raw material, new markets, and new spheres of influence. Now, one fundamental element of imperialism is national oppression. What imperialism does is put nations in chains. It makes a small group of so-called civilized nations in Europe, it makes them the conquerors of most of the nations in the world. So that even though the European powers had taken Africa by force. By what, 1887 is the Berlin Conference, when they go there and carve up Africa like a pie. England, you get a little bit. France, you get a little bit. Belgium, you get a little bit. Holland, you get a little bit. You know, Italians, you get a little bit. That finally, by the beginning of the 19th century, not only was Africa divided completely, but the world had been divided, which is why, of course, we have the First World War, to redivide the world after it's been divided. Then we have the Second World War to redivide the world again. It's important because they're getting ready to redivide the world uno más, you understand? One more time. So, fundamentally, racism comes out of slavery. It is slavery itself that creates the fundamental wealth, the basic accumulation of wealth for capitalism to develop. Capitalism moves from becoming competitive capitalism to monopoly capitalism. And as it becomes monopoly capitalism, it leaves the boundaries of one nation and begins to scramble across the world looking for new profits. And there, the motive of national oppression continues. Do you wonder, for instance, why the United States in its wars since 1945 only fights colored people? It's been fighting Russia with mouth. It's been mouthing off at Russia for years and years and years. If y'all find something wrong with what I'm saying, I know you must have a profound reason. But have you understood that everybody that they have jumped on have been people of color? You know what I'm talking about. That just recently, you know, well, they in Somalia to help the Somalis out. We know that. We're going to have to help them out, help them get out of there, ultimately. And I think we have to blame that on the OAU, that they have become so weak and docile, that they have become such neo-colonial Negroes attached to these various European powers that they allow it. Just like we have to get on the Arab League for letting the Americans march through the Middle East without saying anything, allowing them to overthrow governments and kill people. But they in Somalia. They going in Mozambique in a minute. They trashed Iraq. They went in Panama and arrested a dude like he was a common criminal, said they're going to take him to trial. What would happen if he had been found innocent? Would they take him back and bring the people alive? Would they rebuild those buildings? What about Grenada, a population as big as this audience? What about Nicaragua? National oppression. And now to colonialism, which is ruled by foreign power. Now, in addition to colonialism, add neo-colonialism, which, of course, our brother, the great Amilcar Cabral. How many people here ever heard of Cabral? C-A-B-R-A-L. Amilcar Cabral. Two great books. Return to the Source, The Weapon of Theory, African Revolutionary, murdered in the 1970s by the Portuguese. What Cabral said is that colonialism is being slaughtered. They were slaughtering it. Nkrumah, Ture, Nyerere, Cabral, Monlane, Samora Machel. They were slaughtering colonialism. So what Cabral said is it's no longer necessary for them to rule directly. They can rule through native agents. They can find someone that looks just like you. That's what they're getting ready to do in South Africa. I don't care what you believe. I don't care what this room is called. That is what they are getting ready to do, brothers and sisters in South Africa, rule through Negroes. The same way they rule in these cities. The same way they rule through the various black caucuses of the world. They can move from colonialism to client states to neo-colonialism. And so that the Afro-Americans suffer racism from slavery and national oppression as a result of having or not having three things that Malcolm talked about. We're going to get into Malcolm X. the great Malcolm X, the great Haj Malik El Shabazz, the great Omar Wale, the child come home. Malcolm said there was three things that we should struggle for. One was self-determination, that the Afro-American people, after slavery, before the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, before the 40 acres and a mule that never came, that the black people themselves should have had a referendum, a plebiscite, to determine what should be our relationship to the United States of America. Check that out. We did not come here through Ellis Island. We did not come here looking for freedom or running away from religious intolerance. We were brought here in the bottom of slave ships in chains, 100 million people. A railroad made of human bones. So that no one has the right to tell us what our relationship will be with the United States, nor can anyone here with any amount of authenticity tell us, one, that we have ever been citizens of this country, two, that this country has ever been a democracy. If you believe that this country has ever been a democracy, you are sick. Every person of color can say that. Well, look at this. Every person of saying, how can you say it's a democracy and you don't even have an equal rights amendment for women? Check that out. Even there ain't no democracy for white women. Check that out. So how can you tell me it's a democracy for us? And you don't even have the strength to pass the ERA. They got you fighting about abortion, which splits the movement in half. We haven't heard anybody talk about the ERA in 5 years. Why? Because it's profitable to keep people slaves. You make more money. So the first question for us is self-determination. What is our relationship? Check that out. What should be our relationship to the United States? That is, black people ultimately must call a convention, a conference, hold a plebiscite, because in doing that, we create the consciousness of ourselves as an oppressed nation. If you are not a citizen, what are you? Is there such a thing really as a second-class citizen? What is a second-class citizen? If you have a dead person on the floor and put a sign on him to say, he really is alive, does that change the essential state? What is a second class citizen? You are either a citizen or you're not. This is either a democracy or it's not. January the 1st. What was that the anniversary of, January the 1st, you folks out there? What was that? What should we have celebrated January 1st this year? Haitian independence, all right. But suppose we ain't in Haiti. That's the Emancipation Proclamation, January the 1st, 1863. 130 years, the black people have supposedly been legally on paper free. 130 years. Now that means if you came here in 1619, they say, that means we've been here slaves 240 some years, free 130 years, that means we have been in chains in this country twice as long as we've been free. And 130 years ain't a long time. Self-determination. And so it means that either this generation will do that, hold this referendum, this plebiscite to ask what is our relationship to the United States, or your generation must do it. If your generation does not do it, then the generation after you. If that generation does not do it, then the generation after you, but it will be done. There will be a generation of Afro-Americans who will not allow themselves to be humiliated like this. Who will not allow people to talk to them about welfare after they brought them here in slave ships. And then you want to tell me about welfare? You criminal-minded beast. How can you tell me about welfare? What are you talking about? How did I get here? And you want to tell me about welfare? Is that why you lock up one out of four black men? Is that why the 13th Amendment says that slavery is abolished, comma, except as a punishment for crime? The question of self-determination, that we have the right to determine our relationship with America. If not this generation, the next. If not your generation, the next. Like the Irish. You know how long the Irish been fighting the English? 700 years. The oldest colonial struggle on the planet is the Irish struggle. What do the Irish say? If I don't get you this year, I'll get you next year. If I don't get you next year, I'll get you the year after that. But you will be got. I will be free. You English will get out of here. The greatest English writers of the 20th century are who? Irish. To show you how they pimp off people. How imperialism, colonialism, pimp off people. If you identify with imperialism, if you identify with monopoly capitalism, if you identify with racism, so much for you. There are Negroes who identify with it too. You understand what I'm saying? Colin Powell running around killing people for it. Clarence Thomas running around sentencing people to anything for it. But the question of how long can you struggle forever? Like a relay race. I pass the stick to my children, they pass it to theirs, we will prevail. That's why I hate these Negroes who work at Yale and Harvard, who always saying things like, racism is eternal. Boy, I despise that so much to hear a backward Negro jump up because he can't get a better job at Harvard talking about racism is eternal. Racism not eternal, it will die. They said slavery was eternal. There was Negroes who fought with the Confederacy. Check that out. There was Negroes who had slaves. Check that out. There was Negroes who organized little uniform groups of unfree Negroes to fight for the Confederacy. Check that out. The bestiality to which man is possible to sink. So the question of self-determination that ultimately we will speak for ourselves, that ultimately we have no ties to this government if we are not citizens, that we have no ties to this government if it is not a democracy, that we demand full equality and the right to self-determination means what? You say, well, he's a separatist. The right to self-determination means that. It means you must ask the people what they want to do, and by asking the people, create in them the consciousness that they have the power to do what it is they decide. Some people might say, yeah, we want to separate. We want to get out of here. Some people will talk about regional autonomy. We want to be in charge of the Black Belt South. You know, because what is it? 60% of the Afro-American people still live in the South. 80% of us were born there in the South. You know what Du Bois called the Black Belt? North Carolina, Virginia, South Carolina, Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, Mississippi, those states that Elijah Muhammad asked for, those states that the African Brotherhood asked for, the states that the Republic of New Africa asked for, the states that the African People's Party asked for, that section of the land where we still, county after county, form the majority of people. Yeah, even today. We live in 27 cities in this country. After the Civil War, most of us got out the woods because of the Klan. Came to the cities. We live in about 27 cities in this country, in the main. Most of us live in the South. Outside of there, we live, you know, Washington, Philly. You know, Wilmington, Newark, New York, Boston, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Chicago, those cities. Outside of those cities, there are no black people in the middle of this country except sprung around or spread around. You have to go all the way unless you got some Chicano friends in Denver. You might can slow down there. But most of us live, you'd have to go to Oakland. You'd have to go to Los Angeles. Certainly you know we're there. The question of self-determination. And this is a question that must be settled or there will be no peace in America. And with that question of self-determination must also come the question of reparations for the Afro-American people. I support the reparations for the Japanese Americans who Chief Justice Warren signed into concentration camps so they could rip off all of their property. That's what that was about, you know. They didn't do that to the Germans. the German Americans, they was holding buns and stuff on 97th Street. They ain't do nothing to them. You understand what I'm talking about? I support the idea of reparations, but I think for the Afro-American people, what we need, we don't need to accept their money. We will be broke by the end of the week. What we need is education. We need 344 years of free education for the black people in this country and the institutional development to support that. The white people would never allow you to get that without them getting it, which is a good thing because education should be free anyway. There was no such thing as public education until slavery. There was no such thing as poor people voting till after slavery because of the black struggle for emancipation. And so the question of reparations is important. Free education, 344 years. Because that is the thing we need. They can only humiliate you because our people are en masse uneducated. And too many of us that come into these colleges sell our souls. Too many of us that come into these colleges disappear into the corporations, disappear into the oppressor nation, and we never hear from you again. Too many of you in these colleges think that you're in these colleges because you're smart. And you are smart, but that ain't why you're here. You're here because people struggle to get you here. You're here because the very people. You're here because the very people in those cities, you know, in Syracuse and Rochester, in them little funky towns down there, them little black people across the tracks, them people who will never even see the inside of this building. You understand what I'm talking about? That's who these people are afraid of. They're not afraid of y'all. They know when they give you that certificate, most of y'all, you don't read it closely, but if you read it closely, it'll say, we have defanged them, detoxified them. They are absolutely cool. Give them a job. Oh, yeah. No, I'm not telling you that because I hate you. I'm telling you that because I want you to look closely at what's going in your mind. You know what I'm talking about? The question of self-determination, because the people in those cities need you. That's why they sent you here. That's why they fought in the streets and tried to burn them cities down. And black people, these people talking about Los Angeles, I say all hail Los Angeles myself. That's what I say. I say all hail the freedom fighters of Los Angeles. Why do I say that? Because black people have burnt down every major city in the United States at least once. Why? Well, Rap Brown said it in Cambridge, Maryland. Rap said, if we had atomic bomb, we could get these suckers off our backs. But we don't have atomic bomb. He reached in his pocket, he said. But what can a penny buy? And he held up a match. That night, Cambridge, Maryland went up in smoke. They arrested Rap Brown. Why am I saying that? Because black people burnt down New York City three times before the 19th century. And Atlanta. And New Orleans twice. Mobile, Savannah. The minute they got out west, they start burning down Oakland and Los Angeles. Why? There is no oppression without resistance. The old Africans talked about, you know, when the Sphinx, you know, the Sphinx, half human, half animal, sits there in the desert. When the Sphinx develops a human soul, it becomes what? The Phoenix. That's what that human-headed soul is. In Egyptian, it's called what? Ba, the soul. Ba. That's why they call Ba. It's signified by a black bird. That's why they call people like Charlie Parker bird. You know what I'm saying? So that when the bird rises, what does the bird say? The bird says, I rise in fire. Check that out. The bird says, I rise in fire. What does that mean? It means fuck with me if you want to. That's what it means. My grandmother assured me that's what it meant. I rise in fire. That is, where there is oppression, there is resistance. No matter how many Negroes that you do manage to cop. You understand? Because I went to Howard University. We were all black. And they copped a bunch of them out of there. Clarence Pendleton, man, used to be in my room every afternoon. Crazy, sick Negro like that. Come from a black school. I can name a lot more of them. You understand? They're going to cop some of y'all. People you knew. People you're sitting next to, they're going to cop some of them. You understand what I mean? But some of y'all will not be copped. Some of y'all will escape. Some of y'all will fulfill the destiny that your parents have for you, your grandparents have for you, to lead, to come back into those communities with strength and wisdom, information, dignity, the energy. We cannot change the school system, for instance, until you return. We cannot bring black studies into those schools. The people in those schools don't want black studies until you come back there and do battle with them every day. You understand? We cannot change these communities until you come back armed with some political science and some history and some clarity about what to do with some understanding of your own history. Which brings us to the next point, self-respect, Malcolm. Self-determination, self-respect. What did he mean by self-respect? He said, if you do not respect yourself, you cannot overthrow your enemy because you agree with him. You think you're a Negro. For instance, the only reason you can sit down in that chair there is the chair is unconscious. If the chair were even as conscious as a dog or a cat, it would move. If it were more conscious, you would have to have a dialogue with it. It would say to you, get off me. But to sit still, to not move, to let people sit in your face and to not move, just to sit there, to be oppressed without even flinching or wincing or saying anything, not even to mumble or to moan. That's the consciousness they're creating. Where, for instance, people, if like, you know, it's like somebody got a foot on, guy, you walk up and somebody got a foot on somebody's neck, and you say, hey, get your foot off that guy's neck. And the guy down on the ground say, hey, ain't no foot on my neck. Say, I like that. That's part of my neck. You say, you want to reach down there and forcibly take it off. You know, wait a minute. I'm an individual. If I want a foot on my neck, I can have it on my neck. So, the question of consciousness. And so Du Bois and also Karl Marx talked always about true self-consciousness, that you must come to the point where you understand who you are. When people are talking to your eyes, who is it behind those eyes? Who is it? Do you know? If you knew, conversations would change radically all over the world. I know they would change on this campus if you but knew. I know even some of those lectures in the classroom would change rapidly if you only knew who you were. If when they looked out at you, they could see some conscious reasoning presence there, measuring and judging what they say. You understand what I'm saying? Be changed. That's the way my wife and I taught our kids. The downside of that, we had to get phone calls 3 and 4 times a week. You know what your daughter told me? Like when this one teacher told, you know, my daughter Shani that Malcolm X murder was black on black crime. And she asked, was John Kennedy's murder white on white crime? Mr. Baraka, do you know what your daughter told me? I said, well, look, if as long as she don't hit you, you know, you just have to argue with her, you know? As long as it's in her mouth, you know, you just have to argue with her. You're the teacher, right?